Readers, writers, listeners, welcome. This is the Page Turners Podcast, and I'm your host, Miranda, an avid reader, a novice writer, and a longtime listener of podcasts. Here we go. This is the Page Turners Podcast, episode 14. So I have to laugh at myself a little bit. I said last week that we were on episode 12. We had two episode 12s. Last week with author Bill Early, that was actually episode 13. And today we are on episode 14. We are wrapping up season one of the Page Turners Podcast. We have today's episode and next week's episode, and that's it. We'll be done with season one, but I can tell you guys, I already have plans for season two. I've got some great ideas, some great authors I've already been reaching out to, some other conversations with people who have just a love for reading, and it's going to be great. Season one was kind of like being a fish out of water. It was a learning curve, but it was really exciting. And so season two, I think, is just going to be that much bigger and better. And our conversations are just going to lend more to increasing literacy rates. So without further ado, from pastor to author and freelance writer, today's guest serves the Madison, Wisconsin area with her sermons and readers with her writing, finding her journey to becoming an author alongside her daughter. Today's discussion is with Rebecca Ninke.
Yeah, I grew up in South Dakota. Exactly. I grew up in Huron and had a good childhood, grew up with my one brother, and kind of moved around after that, went to college in Minnesota, seminary in Iowa, and found myself over the years in Kansas City, Phoenix, and then when I met my husband in Colorado, we decided to move to the Madison, Wisconsin area, and we've been here since 2000.
Very cool. So I had the pleasure of meeting you through my job, got to interview you and your daughter on our morning shows, but talk with me a little bit about the book that you guys wrote.
Yeah, so much fun. So my daughter, Kate, and I, we had decided to enter into a contest for a publishing contest. And we had this idea, which I won't tell you because we're still working on that book.
Okay, cool.
And we just had a really hard time. It was a great concept. We had a hard time finishing it. And we were trying to do sketches and neither one of us are gifted in that department. So the night before the contest we had to turn something in, we just kind of said, well, let's just bag it and maybe we'll do that next year. And she was 9 years old at that time, maybe eight. And so we were kind of doing the nighttime routine, which for us has always been books.
The best way to go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. I probably have really tired children because some of our habits. So yeah, a lot of reading and, talking about the day's events and saying prayers at night. And as we were getting ready to do that, and I think Kate was doing her usual delay tactics for an 8-9-year-old. Yeah, she said something about like, well, what if we did a book about like the funny things that kids pray for? And we started laughing and thinking about how really earnestly when she was younger, she had prayed and prayed and prayed to get a unicorn for Christmas. So yeah, she did get a stuffed unicorn, but we weren't able to come up with anything else.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday. So we decided, we kind of looked at each other and we're like, you know, that would be a great book. And we jumped out of bed and ran into the office and she stood behind me in this chair and started telling me what to write. And I was kind of adding to it. And probably, I mean, it's almost embarrassing how quickly we just wrote it. And I said, okay, now you have to go to bed, get in there. And the next day I cleaned it up a little bit and just hit submit, and that was it. So we, even though we didn't win the contest, they gave us a publishing offer. And so that was super fun to and I told them right away, look, this was my co-writer, it's equally hers. And she has to be a part of it if we're going to do this. And her name's going to be on the book and all the decisions we'll make together. And she was a pretty mature little kid. So it was super fun. We just did it all together, picked out the artist. Yeah, it was fun.
I want to know a little bit more about like what that was like to work with your daughter to write this book. I know that it was kind of a, at least this story in particular was kind of a last minute thing, but you guys are very clearly working on something else. So what has that process kind of been like working together like this?
You know, the creative process, I think, requires letting yourself be open to it. Mm-hmm. And for me, I can't speak to everybody, but you know, we spend so much time having like our phones nearby and electronics. And I feel like nobody's going to have an original thought if we're letting all of the electronics like think for us, whether we're like filling any quiet time with, you know, some movie or a show or streaming, or even just like, oh, I have a minute, I'm going to start scrolling through social media. So our best time has been for the creative process is just turning that off and like letting the brain kind of think. And, you know, those quiet times at night, putting a kid to bed, you know, we're not, you know, obviously we wouldn't have a phone, like hopefully buzzing. So that was like the perfect situation. As far as the actual process, I think, you know, the most important thing is always just to do it. I always keep a notebook. I mean, that's kind of old school, but there's something about that movement, that like sensory part. So, you know, don't tell the police, but like I often, when I'm driving back and forth from Wisconsin to South Dakota, that's often when some of my best ideas kind of bubble up.
Strikes.
So I'll, you know, keep like, and I'll be driving safely and just kind of terrible handwriting, jot something down and come back to it later. So, you know, maybe when I have a little less busy professional life, I'll get to some of those, but it's nice. It's nice to know they're there and that those seeds can kind of germinate. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night with like, you know, the cure for cancer. It's the same with books. You know, you think of an idea, some creative thing. And if you're like me, if you don't write it down, you know, goodbye.
Then it just leaves your brain. Well, I won't tell the police on you because I get it. You. I mean, when inspiration strikes, it strikes. And seriously, if you don't write it down, it's like 20 minutes even goes by and it starts to fade. So I totally get that.
Yeah.
So you very clearly are kind of igniting a love for reading with your family. You know, your nighttime routine is books, books, books. But I want to know where your love for reading came from. How did that kind of start for you?
Yeah. So growing up in Huron, we had my parents, I remember them reading to us at night. And, you know, I remember watching Sesame Street and learning letters. I had really great teachers at like Washington School, and they really encouraged us and, you know, put books in our hands. I try not to be a too consumeristic mom, but I feel like kids can never have too many books. That's one thing that I'm always happy to give kids. I think in the last maybe 50, 60, especially with like the technology now, we just know so much about how little brains develop and how, you know, even in utero babies, like hearing a spoken word, you know, and how they're able to identify a parent's voice and how, you know, like babies nurse or drink milk harder when they hear their mother's voice. There's just something like really important about that. So putting books in kids' hands and sitting with them reading. And, you know, it's not just the reading, it's like the cuddling and that sensory piece and sitting them in a safe, secure place. And they're going on an adventure whenever there's a book in front of them, and they're learning about, you know, different ways of thinking. And I just remember like finding books, like Donut Head. I don't know if you've heard of that book, but like when my little boy, he's 20 now, but when he was little, like we read Donut Head and about the struggles that this little kid had in grade school, and he felt a little different. And I just remember thinking like, what a good thing for somebody in grade school to understand, to learn empathy, or if they ever feel like that, to kind of have that experience played out in front of them. I you know, I just remember like what a good thing it was. I would get on my bike in Huron with a grocery sack, and my brother and I, we would go to the library, and they were so good to us there. You know, I remember trying to check out like a book that was made into an R movie, and they were kind of gently like, you know, maybe that's not the best. Let's go.
Maybe in a few years or something.
Yeah, come back when you're 18.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that was just such a thrill for us. And I feel like even in the technological age, my kids, like, you know, going to the library, going to the bookstore, that was always something they look forward to. And it just made me happy. Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely, my parents kind of did that same thing for me. You know, we couldn't, like when I was little, we maybe couldn't necessarily afford like all of the toys at the store or anything. But I think, you know, and I loved books. And if I walked up and was like, Mom, I gotta have this, I gotta read it, that was pretty much always a yes. You know, that was never really something that was turned down. So I love to hear that. You kind of already answered it, but I'm really curious, you know, I think we see, I'm 24, but I have younger siblings and younger cousins, and just talking with other people, I see that a lot of people have lost or haven't even found to begin with like a passion for reading, kind of like you have, like I have, like others have. How do you think we change that? How do we make sure that future generations, your children, my children someday, do have that?
I think that's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree. I get really sad when I see a mom or dad holding a baby and the baby's looking at them and they're holding their phone above the baby and engaged, like scrolling and typing with one hand. They are losing something in not only the bonding opportunity, but I pulled out a book that my friend Dawn Runman wrote, Little Steps, Big Faith. And she talks about how like a baby is like a sapling, and in their brain, when you're reading to them and you're engaging with them and they're picking up on your facial cues, that those branches of the tree in the synapses of their brain are growing. And, you know, I'm just really fearful that people are missing opportunities to engage with their kids. And then as the kids grow, there might be a difference in language development. If they don't have that, somebody reading to them, somebody talking to them, somebody engaging with them really closely. We don't want future generations to be less smart than yours or mine, right?
Yeah,
we want them.
Of course.
They're going to be the ones taking care of us. So that's really important that they keep getting smarter. So yeah, I hope that we, like, I know, like, when people that I know and love have babies, they get a book. Like, yeah. You know, not just my own
gift.
Yeah. I'm just really trying, and I think the schools do a good job and hopefully keeping some, you know, I was a little bit sad when I saw like iPads making their way into like kindergarten, first grade, because I think, you know what, let's keep those books in their hands as long as we can, because when they're teenagers and they want to be on the phone so much, you definitely, you know, lose some of that opportunity. But I've noticed with my own kids, like when they need to relax, like they get out a book, right?
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something I even noticed myself, you know, I used to love to read, and I even used reading as like an excuse to get out of stuff sometimes, where it was like, oh, clean your room, but Mom, I'm reading a book, you know what I mean? Let me read a whole book and then I'll clean my room. You know, and like we were just talking about, like, it's the next generation that we have to focus on, but some of the statistics I've seen, half of adults in the U.S. can't read above an eighth grade level. Do you have any ideas, or maybe we can play off of each other, of how we even fix that for people my age, people your age, people older? How do we change this so that it doesn't just keep cycling through generation after generation?
Yeah, I get that. I mean, the good, I'm not 100% sure of how to change
it's
that.
Tough. I mean, I'm throwing like,
no, that
big question. Gotcha. I'm putting on the spot, Rebecca.
You know, I think, like, since I'm a Lutheran minister, like one of the things that I like to do, like sometimes when kids are baptized, like we give them, we've got little board books. So we try and encourage that. And I think, you know, I see that like with my teacher friends, what do they do at Christmas? They give the kids a book. And identifying some of the challenges that have kept adults from reading. You know, I think we know a lot more about dyslexia and some of those learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. I wish I had an easy answer for that.
I don't think any of us do.
Right. The good news is when I write curricula, if I'm in a Word document or something, you can go in and you can check the reading level. Mm-hmm. And eighth grade is pretty functional. That's kind of what we shoot for when we're doing an adult curriculum even. And that's, you can use some pretty good words at eighth grade reading level. So the good news is that it's not as, it's more inclusive than it sounds, I think. There's a lot of books that somebody with an eighth grade reading level could knock out and enjoy.
For sure. Well, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but there may be more coming from Rebecca, and I'm completely blanking on your daughter's
Kate,
name.
Kate, yeah.
Kate, oh my gosh. When can we kind of expect to maybe see another kid's book or something else?
You know, that's a great question. I've just had a really busy, I work at a couple churches and I've got like a freelance writing business and do a lot of funerals. I'm to the point where I'm kind of ready to say I'm ready to set aside the freelance writing so that I can just do some things of my own.
Yeah.
And Kate, she's so funny because even at age 9, she was like, you know, like I took the payment because I pay the taxes, but then we split it. And she was just so clear. I'm like, okay, but this, and I'm like, well, what about the tax? no, you cover that. So she's like, you know, maybe I'll just write one on my own.
Okay.
She didn't want to split it.
That's cool though. I love that she, you know, maybe not just because of the money and stuff, but I love that she's inspired. She's like, all right, Mom, we've done it together. I think I can do it on my own now.
I'm ready to go out on my own. Yeah. And honestly, I think she was. She's a talented writer, but it was really fun. I would not have traded, you know, even if there hadn't been a penny, which you know, in writing world is pretty close. Mm-hmm. But I would not have traded that experience for anything. It was just, it was so neat to be able to like go through the process and, you know, we got to like spec out the illustrations. So we're kind of not cheesy people. So, you know, like we have a picture in here and the illustrator, he did a great job, but we're like, okay, we need to make this, like, there needs to be a kid like with his finger in his nose here. And, you know,
very reminiscent of real life.
Yeah. This is a book about prayer, but we think there should be dog poop in here. So yeah, it was just really fun being creative and
awesome. I love that. Well, I'm very excited to see what comes next and maybe see just Kate's name on her own book someday. I think that'll be very cool.
Thank you.
Is there anything else? I know we kind of touched on like a wide array of things within the topic of being an author and reading, but is there anything else that you think I might have missed in my questions?
You know, I just really want to encourage people. It doesn't have to be your kid that you're reading to, right? You know, we're all kind of sensitive to boundaries and personal space, especially around children, which is a-okay. But I think, you know, you can be the neighbor who sits on the front porch and reads to the kids across the street, you know, with parents' permission. And it takes a village. And I think that, you know, comes into play here too, that grandparents and, you know, siblings, aunts and uncles, everybody can help kids develop a love for reading and for books.
I love that. It takes a village. I think that's kind of the perfect way to kind of encompass it all, that it's not just on one person. We can all kind of do it together and hopefully increase literacy rates for the future.
Amen.
And before we go, I have a request. If you feel so inclined, if you would like to, please leave a review of the Page Turners podcast. We're wrapping up season one. We're getting ready to do some interviews for hopefully season two. And if you could leave a review, that will help more people find the Page Turners podcast. We can expand the discussion on access, education, and representation in terms of literacy if we can get more people listening. So please, please leave a review. I would greatly appreciate it. And make sure to tune in next week for the final episode of season one of the Page Turners podcast. Until then, make sure you head over to social media. You can find me at @Miss_MissouriRiver for more information about page turners and how you can fall in love with reading. See you next week.